This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. Crime in Milwaukee has been on a sharp incline following the pandemic, setting records for homicides. Experts in Milwaukee and the county of Milwaukee have been focusing on root causes and solutions prioritizing relationships and public health. The experts we have with us today are David Muhammad, Deputy Director of the Department of Health and Human Services for the county, Marquesa Tucker-Harris, Executive Director of the African American Roundtable, and Sherwin Hughes, radio host with 101.7 The Truth. Welcome to all three of you.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
So we're going to talk a little bit, starting with the data, some of the most recent data from the Department of Justice. It shows the homicide rate throughout the county and in the city has more than doubled since prior to the pandemic. Countywide, there were 106 homicides in 2019 compared to 220 in 2022. The city set a homicide record last year for a third year in a row with 212 homicides. There is some good news. According to City of Milwaukee numbers, homicides are down about 33% from this time last year, and all of violent crime in the city is down 14%. David, when you look at this data, how do you summarize what's happening?
Well, I would add that the impact of the pandemic has been significant. You saw the courts shut down effectively from in-person service for about 2 years. You saw schools and other youth-serving agencies also move in a way where families were disconnected from other social service agencies that could have intervened or offered support. And so there's been a great deal of adjustment that people have had to make, as well as an acute rise of mental health services. Those being all factors, we've seen an increase not only nationally, but of course in Milwaukee. In 2022, 12% of the victims of homicides were young people, and so we've seen a growth there, particularly youth ages 16 to 17. But we saw a decline from 2017, 2018, and 2019. So we know that there's interventions that can work. We know that there's community partners that are engaged, and we know that there are resources and ways to stabilize families that can make neighborhoods safer. And we believe that those efforts can be done, can be increased, can be brought to scale, and can make an impact if we stay the course.
Marquesa, how do you explain to people outside of Milwaukee what is happening in the city?
Yeah, first, it's, you know, though, to hear and see that type of data is traumatic for myself, and I'm sure our community, when we hear about it, we see it. And unfortunately, living in here in Milwaukee has been tough, you know, for us, for black people, for brown people, not just pandemic, we're talking about prior to that. So these have been things that have been happening for quite some time. And it's unfortunate because I know that there has been quite a bit of divestment from black and brown communities. And now we're unfortunately seeing some of that play out. But also we know that there's bigger systemical things that have happened to put our communities in these places as well. And so people describe Milwaukee as a very hard place to live. Some people say it's a cloud over our city and or it's very segregated, and we know that as well. And so someone who's not in the city, who has not lived in our city or know anything about our city, it's a little hard to describe at times. But living here, we know that there's hope for some of the work that Dave Muhammad's doing and others throughout the community, including the African American Roundtable and other community leaders, as David was saying, that are doing the work to try to pull us from a very, very dark place that's been going on for generations before our time.
Sherwin, three record years for homicides in the city. Is Milwaukee a safe place?
You know, I can say as someone who born, raised, and educated in Milwaukee, it is a safe place. And I can be an individual example, right? I'm 48 years old. I've never been murdered. So that's just one example of how, you know, everyone who comes to Milwaukee, they think that the worst case scenario is going to happen to them. A lot of these incidents have got backstories behind them, but also we have to look at this at the 10,000-foot view. There's a larger conversation about violence and gun violence that needs to take place nationally. And while Milwaukee is not, you know, as large as some of our other counterparts like Chicago or L.A., having any amount of homicides is far too many. But we're still an American city in a nation that has a problem with violence, with homicides, and with gun violence. So the good news is these numbers are on a decline, and hopefully, you know, more attention can be paid to the very vulnerable people who I know were harmed during the pandemic and are still being harmed. And hopefully with more attention on these numbers, because they're shocking for everyone, we can start to come to some very swift solutions.
David, you've been working on this issue for many years throughout your career. What do you point to as like three main root causes? I know there are many, but if you could point to three.
Well, I think looking at a city like Milwaukee, as Sherwin stated, the disinvestment, and as Marquesa stated as well, excuse me, you're talking about 40 years of deindustrialization, of jobs leaving the city, of a basic income that could support a family, not keeping pace with the cost of living. So housing is definitely a major component. And folks who know the book Evicted and are seeing some of the issues there can definitely attest to that. I think additionally, when you look at the impact of incarceration, when you look at every 15 years, another generation being caught in the criminal legal system, that's made an impact of young people growing up in families that have been separated by mass incarceration. So that's another root cause. And I think when you look at the levels of poverty, economic disadvantage, and educational attainment, you're talking about something that's much more systemic and much deeper. And the effect of that is a learned hopelessness and a despair that manifests in self-hatred. And so when you add guns into the mix, you get the recipe for disaster that we've seen in our communities. And that's the uphill road that we're up against.
Marquesa, in terms of root causes, would you add anything to that list?
I absolutely agree with this list, and unfortunately I have to plus one so many of some of the terrible things that he's had to share. I would also say just the structural violence, you know, of institutions, whether it's the health system, whether it's the educational system, the structural violence that folks have to deal with, whether it's to get daycare, whether it's to go to school, whether it's to try to get a fresh meal. I think that also structural violence is definitely high on the list as well, alongside of the big thing around disinvestment. We unfortunately continuously see, and you know, we'll talk about a little bit later, the police budget, but not just the police budget, the scrambling for dollars and scrambling for resources. The community continues to see ways where that's being pulled away, but also folks not having access to what is available. It's hard to find, red tape, you don't know where it is, you don't know who to talk to. So also just the lack of access to some of these things, whether it is the fresh food, whether it is the mental health, whether it is quality education, the lack of investment, the lack of people having access to that as well, and the structural violence, I will add.
Sure, when you've lived in the community for your entire life, do you agree with these root causes? Are there other things at play?
No, absolutely, I agree with the root causes, but also, you know, we are consistently told that Milwaukee is the worst place for black children across a number of measurable social indicators. This oftentimes is what you get. So we didn't have any racial data attached to the numbers that you gave us, but we can imagine a disproportionate amount of these homicides are African Americans. And so if you have the worst place for even, you know, maternal mortality, educational attainment, as David said, and just upward mobility, educational attainment, we've got a public school system where far too many children who graduate from there need to take additional years of remedial classes just before they can get into their major at a four-year institution. So unfortunately, this is an extension of Milwaukee being rated as the worst place for African Americans, especially black children. You are going to get statistics like this as long as we continue to be rated so low.
You each have been working on the issue of violence in Milwaukee in various ways in your positions. I'd like to give you each a chance to talk about your work. David, just yesterday I know the county held a community event hearing from youth and families, community members about their solutions, their ideas. What are some of the things you're hearing in the community?
Well, definitely the need for supportive housing as well as more youth development programming and intervention there. We've had since 2021 our Credible Messenger program, which takes 5 to 7 different agencies that are working with youth who are on some form of supervision or are part of some type of pain-based group, people used to call them gangs, of young people who are in the community and doing harm, and we're trying to do what we can on the front end there. We're seeing a great deal of work that needs to be done with substance use disorder and behavioral health. And so young people are experiencing the same things that adults are experiencing, but unfortunately youth are often the canary in the coal mine. And so we've seen increases in domestic violence and other rates of homicide that are affecting older populations, but young people are bearing the brunt of it. And so we've used our ARPA dollars, the recovery dollars, to help invest there and help develop a more sustainable funding plan to continue this work moving forward.
Marques, I know that your work with the African American Roundtable has a lot of it centered on getting people more engaged in the city budgeting process and getting the message out there. You've been investing in advertising and marketing around this. For example, this billboard we're going to show that you sponsored that shows the contrast in city funding of the police department compared to funding for libraries and health programs. On your website, you count as wins for your organization's advocacy to get the city to cut $4 million from the police budget, including a significant reduction in officer positions, as well as increases in funding for community programs and housing. I know you've said in various statements that you stand by your organization's call to defund the police. How can you explain to how removing officers keeps the community, makes the community safer?
Yeah, the same way I would say that if you add officers, how is that going to keep the community safe? Police are not preventative. They are reactionary to the unfortunate things that we're talking about right now. The reason why people feel that they need to call the police is because of all of the things that they're dealing with. They don't have other options. They don't know about credible messengers. So when we talk to people about 414 Life, the violence prevention program in the city of Milwaukee, some people don't even know that that even exists. But we also know that that organization is also stretched thin. They're not spread across the entire city of Milwaukee. And so there's not a lot of options for people. But there's no data that I've heard of or seen that shows that when you add more police into communities or more law enforcement into communities, that it actually makes it safer. What we do know is what keeps people safe is when people have their basic needs met, they have housing, they have family-sustaining jobs, and they also have access to the things that are going to help them thrive. And I and haven't heard or, again, seen anywhere where it says that, anywhere where it proves that having more police into a community, whether they're black, they're white, they show up and look like the same people in the community, actually is going to help prevent the crime versus actually dealing with the root causes that prevents crime.
Sure. When you host your regular radio talk show host, I know you said this morning this was a topic that you were discussing with your listeners. What are you hearing in the community? Do community members want more police? Do they want more types of programs and supports? What's the feedback you're getting?
So it's a mix, and it depends on when you talk to that community member. If they were just recently the victim of violence or they just got their car stolen, well, of course they want more police. Or when they called the police, they didn't show up on time. So depending upon who you ask and when you ask, they can say a variety of things. But ultimately, the community believes that the youth are salvageable, that we need programs for them. They need to be involved. They need to be connected. They need to see themselves not just a part of our community right now, but also in the future. And when it comes to, you know, folks who may have served time in the correctional system. And the other thing is, you know, when young people first get in trouble, it's usually something minor and very early on. The public wants to see early interventions because the kid who's just hanging around with the wrong crowd at 13 or 14 can be salvageable and can be someone that can be a very productive member of our system or of our society. And then someone who has been in the system and then they've served their debt to society, they come out, we've got to do our best to reintegrate them back into society, let them have the opportunity to be a homeowner, let them have the opportunity to have a good family sustaining job, and hopefully we can put their past behind them. Because I think when people are incarcerated for whatever the reason, they are disconnected from friends, from family, from community, and from work. And so if we have the resources to put them back into the community and say, hey, you know what, you did some things, now you're back, now you got to be productive again. And I think that ultimately is what I hear from the callers on pretty much a daily basis.
I know, David, you've talked about the costs of incarceration. I think you shared with me annual costs for one youth incarcerated around $430,000, going to be increasing next year even. How do you think the community needs to balance that enforcement and, I guess, punishment, for lack of a better word, with early intervention and other prevention strategies?
So I think we have to really discuss what accountability looks like for the kinds of incidents that are happening in community. I mentioned the Credible Messenger Program. Our pilot evaluation of that was that youth who stayed with the program, 77% of them desisted from any future involvement over the course of their involvement and the year after with the criminal legal system. So I think that's significant. It shows that that program, which cost about $1.2 million, which is the cost to incarcerate three young people in Lincoln Hills, served over 100 young people and prevented a significant amount of you know, violence that would have occurred in the community. These were young people who had gun charges, auto theft charges, and have had incarcerated family members. So we know that there are solutions that work. We just have to bring them to scale, and it does take resources. But the cost to incarcerate people has an immediate cost that is untenable, and it has a social cost that is destructive. Mm-hmm. And so we see that. Even with the discussions taking place now, if we're not able to adequately fund what is occurring in Milwaukee County, obviously programs and other things would be impacted. But the long-term impact is something that people should consider as a risk that we should avoid.
What about guns? What do each of you, I guess I'll ask each of you, what do you have to say about the role of guns and if there should be any changes in gun policies in Wisconsin or in the community?
Go ahead.
Well, I would say that the charges that we're seeing young people come in with, particularly even now young women, coming in with gun charges, shows how easy it is to get a gun, the proliferation of them, how they're modifiable by switches or bump stocks that can turn them into semi-automatic weapons, how they can be made by 3D printers, how they can be ordered online or bought in sporting goods stores. So the gun culture of America and Wisconsin, to be frank, is something that you really have to change the hearts and minds before we change the policy, because there's a lot of people who feel very strongly about either position, but it's something that has to be addressed.
Is there a change to gun laws that you think would make a big difference for the city of Milwaukee?
I ultimately don't think so, because people are going to skirt around laws all the time. We skirt around laws, processes, and policies. But also, you know, you have to think about peeling the onion back on how did all of these guns get here and how do they keep getting dumped into these places where it's so accessible for people to get them. So even if you put, what we call Band-Aids on bullet wounds when it comes to talking about guns and the policies, I think that we have to continue to peel back the onions. But also I heavily agree with what David said around it really is a heart issue, because someone can have their hands on a gun and they can use it to what they would so-called say to protect their families. But if something happens in the heart of that person, you can't be sure what they will do with that gun.
What do you hear about guns? What's your opinion on what should happen?
Well, we have too many, but we have to figure out how do we coexist in a society where there are firearms. And a lot of these things, they can range from, you know, the data is not always very explicit. Some of it is self-defense, but you'll just hear it as another homicide or another shooting. You know, some of it is people just don't have conflict resolution skills, mm-hmm. where if you have an issue with somebody, well, you're going to try and resolve the issue by doing something drastic with a firearm that's far too easy to get. But the other thing is, and I firmly believe this, police-community relations. So if I need help or if I feel threatened, but I don't know if the threat is worse from the person who is threatening me or from the police when they're called to try and, you know, provide me service, then people may take things into their own hands. And so we need to simultaneously work on all sorts of things. But if the police and the community had a better, stronger, more trusting relationship, then I think a lot of these situations could be remedied that way instead of people taking things into their own hands in a society where we have far too many guns.
Let's talk about the media, Sherwin. This is your topic. What do you think about the way the media reports on violence in Milwaukee?
So they don't give us the details. You know, we don't know if a shooting was, you know, a mom who's at home with her kids and she is a legal, lawful gun owner, and someone tries to break into her house when she's home and she defends herself and her family, that's going to be reported as a shooting. That's going to be reported as a homicide, and they're going to give you the cross streets and they're going to tell you what neighborhood it happened in. They're not going to give you the details of that. The other thing is, because Milwaukee just, you know, holds the monopoly on the amount of, you know, fatal and non-fatal shootings, we stick out as this anomaly in the state. But if the data was reported differently, so an example would be, you know, 200 homicides in the city of Milwaukee is wholly unacceptable. But a Wisconsin town somewhere up north that has a single double homicide and they have 6,000 people, that homicide rate's the same as Milwaukee's. But that won't get promoted like what happens in Milwaukee. We have the largest population. You're going to have, you know, more disagreements. You're going to have more conflict. Obviously, you have more firearms. And so our numbers are going to be higher. But I think the rates of gun violence all throughout the state could be very similar, if not in some cases higher than Milwaukee, but it's not reported like that with the media. They want to make Milwaukee look like this terribly scary place, and other parts of the state are rosy and perfect, which we know they're not.
Mark Hayes, do you think the media is fair to what's going on in Milwaukee? Are they reporting on the good things happening?
Well, I actually used to work in media. I worked at Channel 12 and CBS 58 on the assignment desk, and my job was to listen to the scanners, the police scanners. And I didn't send people to when kids were planting gardens. I sent them to where there were shootings, where there were fatal accidents, where, you know, Flight for Life was called out. That's what we wanted, and that's where we sent our photographers, and that's what people saw in the news, and that's what people tuned into. And as they say, what bleeds, leads. So, no, I don't think that we are promoting enough of the positive things that are happening here in the city of Milwaukee, because we know that there are so many things. But, again, are people looking to access that information? Are people looking to share those types of stories? And don't get me wrong, I know that there are some media outlets out there who are looking to do and looking to share more positive stories, but I still think because of the negative impact of how we have told so many stories, we have a black eye now. And so I don't even watch the news anymore just because I know that I have to protect my own peace, and I also have to keep myself from the trauma that's constantly being pushed through the media while they're showing all of the negative news, specifically a lot of the violence and the crime that's happened because of the things that we haven't necessarily done to get ourselves here.
Do you think there are some things that the media doesn't get about what's happening in Milwaukee?
I think it's very selective what they choose to report, and that goes for print as well as televised media. I think the audience oftentimes is the Wild Counties, Waukesha, Washington, and Ozaukee County, and not necessarily people who live in the city of Milwaukee. And I also think that the constant diet of fear about the city of Milwaukee, when Milwaukee gets out of its own way and starts looking at the economic impact of owning the negative narrative, worst place to raise a black child, you know, highest rate of violence in the state, et cetera. When we really look at the resilience of the people in the city of Milwaukee, that's the story that really can be told. There's a lot of opportunity in the city, and I think that media has a responsibility to tell the whole story. And as Sherwin stated, the details behind it, how much of these incidents are domestic violence related or unintended target related or other types of situations where it's not just another homicide, another person killed. Each one of these people is a story and a neighborhood and a family impacted, and we can do better.
Well, let's transition to everyone's favorite topic, politics. Legislators in Madison have been talking a lot about Milwaukee and what's happening in Milwaukee as they were passing the shared revenue bill that was just signed into law. It puts some certain restrictions on the city. That shared revenue deal signed by the governor will require Milwaukee Public Schools to add 25 police or school resource officers. I think we have a graphic on this. The city of Milwaukee must also hire more than 100 additional police officers. City and county both been asking for the authority to raise sales taxes to increase revenues. That means sales tax in the city alone could go up from the current 5.5% to 7.9% if approved by the county board and common council. Marques, I know your organization has weighed in on this. You think this is a bad deal for Milwaukee, is that right?
Yeah, I think that we've just taken the lesser of the two evils. I totally agree that we need more revenue. We need more opportunity. We're the ones who carry the state. And so I'm not sure what it looked like to negotiate these deals and these restrictions that you just talked about. Young people fought and used their voices and used talents and gifts and skills to get those resource officers out of the school, only now to put a provision back into this deal where they have to go back. These students know what they need, they know what they want, and this is not what is going to help to keep them safe ultimately. What about therapists? Why didn't we put a restriction in there for therapists and for students to get support in that way? Wraparound care. And I'm also curious around why did we negotiate to get more police back in the streets versus negotiating to get more resources back into our community to do things like conflict resolution, to get more skills for people in that way? So I'm just curious why we had to take the lesser of this type of deal. And ultimately, we know that taxes are regressive for black and brown people. This, again, has been something that has come not just overnight. It wasn't something that Mayor Chevy, you know, that he is totally responsible for. But this has happened way before time. And then what are we going to do when this money runs out? Because this still is not enough to save the city of Milwaukee. So why aren't we thinking more bigger with a greater vision around what else we can do to bring the resources that are needed to the city of Milwaukee and not things that are going to continue to tear the community down?
David, I know some said without this shared revenue deal that the city was on the brink of bankruptcy, and that would mean less funding for programs like Credible Messenger and some of the things that you're doing throughout the county. What are your thoughts on that shared revenue deal? Necessary evil?
I think County Executive Crowley has been clear about the fiscal condition of Milwaukee County, as well as some of the challenges that we're facing with the fiscal cliff. I think for the work that we do with Department of Health and Human Services, it is something that we are going to have to really pay close attention to and how it's going to impact us. We're already looking at what it means for the end of the ARPA dollars and how we're going to have to shift to some sustainable funding through Medicaid and other resources to make sure that these programs are able to survive. Because right now, much of this, for the youth in particular, rests upon state funding through youth aids. And that is always under a challenge. And so there's much that would have to occur. And then the kind of things that we're talking environmentally through transportation, parks, and other things are also impacted by this. And so we're looking to see how it's going to impact us and our work.
Sherwin, you have a background in politics, worked formerly for Mayor Barrett, Congressman Barrett, and appointee in the Doyle administration. Is there too much politics in what happens in Milwaukee, the sort of resources they get?
More than too much politics. So this shared revenue bill is vindictive and is malicious. And the Republicans, who control the state legislature, used to respect this thing called the home rule. They also used to respect local control. Outstate Republican legislators know that Milwaukee is a different kind of city. You know, it's a different kind of environment. We've got different challenges, and they would respect Milwaukee making its own decisions. But because the city of Milwaukee is overwhelmingly Democratic, the Republican-controlled legislature said, oh, you guys want to defund the police? Now we're going to require you to have more police. Oh, you want to take, you know, police officers out of your schools? We're going to put them back in because we want to be malicious and vindictive. Milwaukee is vulnerable. There's no question about that. And a Republican-controlled legislature, an incredibly, you know, divided political state that we are in, took advantage of our vulnerability. And so what I've been telling folks is that this bill is bad for the entire state. Like, people who live outstate should be telling their Republican legislators, why are you putting all these unnecessary strings on a bill where Milwaukee can get more revenue? Because everyone comes to Milwaukee. They may not tell you that. They come to Summerfest. They come to State Fair. They definitely come to Bucks games and Brewer games. Those folks need to feel safe in our city as well. And so being punitive and vindictive on Milwaukee, and things like, you know, requiring now police chiefs and fire chiefs now get to hire, fire, and discipline, where we had an independent citizen board that did that. Now that has been gutted. Totally unnecessary in increasing Milwaukee's revenue. One more thing I got to say. There's a town called Lawrence, Wisconsin. Most people never heard of it. Well, they got a 1,000% increase in shared revenue. Waukesha County, 500% increase in shared revenue. Milwaukee, 10%. And if we do not meet the number of required police set by folks who don't live in Milwaukee, we'll lose our 10% increase in shared revenue. So that being said, including the sales tax increase, which I clearly can talk forever about, I think that we need better policy if we are going to improve Milwaukee beyond the statistics that everyone seems to read every day.
We have time for one last question, and I'm going to pose it to each of you. If you had a magic wand and you could change one policy that you think would make a significant difference in safety and quality of life in Milwaukee, what would it be?
I would significantly increase the funding for youth programming, youth development, and the family supports necessary to stabilize the home, whether that's through housing, whether that's through substance abuse, you know, resources, mental health. I would do it in a way that allowed us to be much more preventative than a need for people to come through the courts or some type of other crisis situation to receive that help.
Marquesa, one significant policy change with a magic wand?
I don't know if I would say necessarily policy change, but definitely an infrastructure that can hold some of the policies that we need necessary to support some of the things, again, that David was saying. We do not have an infrastructure that can hold the type of, like, when the ARPA dollars came through, we're still not spending those dollars. That money is just sitting somewhere, not being utilized, and there's so many needs in the city of Milwaukee. We need better infrastructure, and we need the people who are going to put together better policies to create the infrastructure to hold the things that are necessary for the families to thrive in the city of Milwaukee.
Sherwin, you have that magic wand. What's that one policy change or funding change you'd make?
So first, allow city of Milwaukee residents to determine what we need and for us to make those decisions instead of a political party that doesn't always represent the interests of our city. So I come to find out something like $6 billion worth of income is made in Milwaukee from people who live outside of Milwaukee. They drive into Milwaukee all the time. They utilize our resources, our services, our infrastructure, a tollway, and allow Milwaukee that has all of these different travel and tourism amenities to charge people that come here and play and work and then go back out to their enclaves. If you want to come to our city, you're welcome, but it's going to cost you $2 each way. And that money should go to Milwaukee, and that should be decided what that money is used for by the residents in our city.
Well, that is our time for our discussion today. I thank you to each of you for sharing your thoughts with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civics broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.